It's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Podcast. A lot of action, a lot of exciting stuff. Announcements in the last week. We got the haters on the run, scurrying like rats. They're all going to be begging for mercy soon. But we got a lot of stuff to talk about today. Joining me on my left, my co-host, Corey Stockton, Reed Connell. In the back, man in the YouTube chat, of course, Connor Josh. And put your comments, questions in there. So, guys, this was a hell of an event. What do we have, 5 out of 9 subs?
5 out of 9, yep. They just keep getting better.
Shout out to Fat Tire with the sub bonus, right?
Yeah, and I'm sure that drove a lot of the action. But, of course, the guys we have on Who's Number One, they're always hunting the sub, right?
What was your favorite match?
Reed?
I mean, so many sick matches. I mean, you know, you have to shout out Mikey. But I think definitely, actually, my favorite match was the first one of the night, to be honest. Was that Damian versus Louise. Both dudes went to battle. Louise looked great, even though he lost, got the submission in. And I thought Damian had my favorite submission of the night, man. That step back take was so slick.
Yeah, you can't ask for anything better than that, right? It's like a back-and-forth battle. Louise comes out, he's beating up on Damian a little bit, hitting some nice takedowns, had Damian trouble, and then Damian, you know, weathered the storm, come back at the submission. Right,
absolutely. That was a sick one. Yeah. Kicked it off like just how we wanted it to. You know, all these matches, pretty much except for maybe one or two, were great. Every single time the athletes step up more and more and just put on a bigger and bigger show. So this trend's rolling, bro. It's sick
for sure. For me, it was the Mika Galvao Andrew Tackett match all the way. I mean, we got to see really on against a Who's Number One veteran, what Mika Galvao is going to look like in the future, what to expect from him. Also really impressed by the heart that Andrew Tackett showed. I mean, you know, Andrew was mounted for a good portion of the match and was fighting for his life even in the last 10-15 seconds of the match. So great showing from both guys.
Yeah, Andrew Tackett's a hell of a competitor too. I mean, we saw Mika the week before tear everybody up at Nogi Pans, but I mean, this was a big state for him and Nogi. His cardio looked great. I mean, we got a lot of interesting stuff from this going into the next one, too, because of course we got Mikey and Craig already announced in the next one. They went out in his submissions. Nogi Mikey's pretty interesting, right? Heel hook Mikey. I think people are going to love this version of Mikey.
Oh my gosh. Like, we just scratched the surface of heel hook Mikey. We just scratched the surface of who Nogi Mikey is. So I can't wait to see him up against these big heavy hitters down the line. So many interesting matchups.
Connor, before we get into breaking down the action over the weekend, roll call. Who's in the chat right now? Who we got in there?
You know what? Oh, Steve stopped by, but he said he had to go. He has apparently a real job, whatever that means. and everyone else, it looks like Luis Quiñones is actually in the chat. Shout out, Luis. Hey, your match was awesome, man. I'm going to be bothering the Michael Sears to have you back because we're always down for some more wrestling heavy grappling.
For sure. We could always use more exciting people in 145. It's great to have 10th Planet people on. So, yeah, let's start. We already talked about this one a little bit. Let's run through the whole card real quick. Damian versus Louise. This was an interesting one. This is the type of thing we like to put on the prelims, right? The free prelims. Up-and-comer, sort of unknown guys. Let them get out there. Let people get to know who they are. And, I mean, they did a great job of that one. I mean, Damian's got to be a big name after this.
Yeah, and there was no feeling out period in this match, right? Luis Quiñones went right after the takedown. I think he shot for a takedown within the first 5 seconds of the match. So talk about a way to get a match started, right? Like, and he was pouring the pressure on. He was looking pretty dominant. And then when Damian took control of the match, he backstepped the legs, and then, like Reed mentioned, that backstep from side control to the back was super impressive. I'm going to be studying that for the rest of the week.
Super slick. Yeah, man, this is a quintessential Who's Number One match. Luis looked great. He went out there, pushed the pace. Damian looked a little on his heels, looked a little not knowing really what to do, deer in headlights for a second there. Luis was putting the pace on him. You know, things kind of evened out towards the end of the match, and then Damian took control. But this is classic 10th Planet versus DDS rivalry. I'm sure we'll even see that one again down the line probably. But like you said, man, Luis looked great. He's the type of guy we want on Who's Number One. Guys are going to get after it.
I think the story for this one is Damian's team has so much experience in this event. I think he's heard from them. Like, 15 minutes is a long time. You got to really conserve your energy. I think he tried to just hang in there, conserve his energy, not burn himself out, and then he ended up the one with more energy in the end. Something interesting that Damian was asking about in the post-fight interview, he said, like a match with Keith Kerkorian, that'd be a hell of a one. I said he's fought him like three times, but it'd be great to run that on the show.
Man, we got to have Damian back on there. He looked so great, and I thought he could have got that submission of the night. You know, who knows? But, yeah, let's get Damian a match again, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, and I do like the idea of having some new blood in the 145 division, right? It's a little bit thin right now, so seeing guys like Damian, guys like Luis, and Keith Kerkorian would be a great addition to that.
Keith Kerkorian, ADCC veteran.
Yeah. So. We got to get we have all these submission bonuses. We got to get some sort of fight of the night. Or match of the night or whatever. We got to get somebody to sponsor something like that going forward. That'd be great, because, I mean, I think these guys would have won it for sure. Second match of the night, Cole Abate showing up in the prelims again. This kid is really something special. Wow. I mean, Bird Wiltsie is no joke. Bird Wiltsie was a blue belt Nogi World Champion. He's a brown belt now. Cole's 16 years old, and he made it look easy out there. I think this kid can hang with anybody around 145, 155 right now.
No, Cole is just that good, and I really want to start seeing him. You know, I'm sure it's hard to give a blue belt a match against the top level black belt, but I think he can hang up there, and I really want to see that. I think, you know, he keeps on proving to us what he can do, not just at Who's Number One events, especially at Who's Number One events, but even at, you know, IBJJF Opens and, you know, this tournament, that tournament. He looks dominant in every single match he's in.
Like you said, it's hard to get a super fight for a blue belt. Like when Ty Rotolo was a blue belt, Nicky Rao was a blue belt, nobody would have gave them a super fight, but they made their name at ADCC. Now people got no choice. Who knows? Maybe we see Cole Abate in this 155 division in September. We'll get on to September later. Is that something you guys would like to see?
100%, man. Cole is looking dominant. I mean, this guy might be like greatest of all time when it's all said and done. You know, he's so, so young still. And to see the level of technique that he has when he goes out there is just mind-blowing. Like you said, Bird Wiltsie, we all know the Daisy Fresh crew. Those guys are game. Those guys are ready to throw down, have hard, grueling matches. And Cole just took it to him, man. And every single time we see Cole, you know, we've all been kind of following Cole since he was a youngin, and just to see him kind of mature and grow year after year or match after match, you know, he's filling out, he's getting to be a big teenager, you know, so the sky is really the limit for him. There's so many big matches for Cole coming down the line, and man, this might have been one of his best performances of his entire career on last Friday.
I mean, another interesting one could be the winners of the two matches we just talked about, Cole Abate versus Damian Anderson.
Wow, that is a good point. Yeah, that is an interesting one.
That was actually thrown up by the YouTube chat just a second ago. They're trying to match make for him. But I want to make something clear for the YouTube chat here, because there was the question of, wait, putting a blue belt versus a black belt? When we're talking about Cole Abate, belts don't matter.
Yeah, we don't care at all.
Don't talk about it. Exactly. It's not.
Tyro Tolo is a brown belt. He's fighting Craig Jones in our main event this month. So, I mean, what are they even talking about?
Make no mistake, Cole is a high-level black belt.
I think Nicky Rod is still a purple belt, right, technically. I mean, Nicky Rod just fought Yuri Samoa. So, I mean, to act like there's any sort of we're not even paying attention to belts here. Third and final match of the prelims. Two more youngsters. 17-year-old Mika Galvao coming off of that win at Brown Butt at Nogi Pants against 18-year-old Andrew Tackett. Tackett has looked phenomenal on Who's Number One before. He really looked great in his last prelim against Shawn Diadamarco. And, I mean, Mika made it look like easy work. What, he mounted him a couple times? He was fighting for the sub all the way to the end. I was super impressed with Mika. I mean, obviously, we've heard all the hype about him. We've heard he's like this Superman coming out of Brazil. But he looked like he might be the real deal, huh?
Yeah, and I said this actually yesterday on the Grappling Bolden podcast, but I was really impressed by every time I watch Mika, it looks like he's kind of a jiu-jitsu iteration of Anderson Silva, right? Everything he does is just a perfectly timed counterattack. There's a little bit of, you know, forward motion, and he'll set some things up, but really where he shines is when he can make his opponent make a mistake, and then he just unloads a chain of attacks and an attack after attack until he gets where he wants. So it's really impressive to watch that level of jiu-jitsu sense and mat sense just kind of integrated in him. It's clear he's not thinking about it. He's just doing it.
Yeah, this is the coming out party for Mikael de Galvão there. You know, he's a huge name in Brazil already, but now the American fans have got a taste at just exactly how good this guy is, Mikael Galvão. You know, really next level type of talent. We all know how good Andrew is, and I thought Andrew looked great in the match too.
Absolutely.
He pushed the pace, which is what we want. And if you're losing the match, this is a guy, Andrew, who never stopped pushing the pace to the very, very end. He never stopped trying to win the match. So shout out to Andrew. He definitely was a reason why the match was, or he was a reason why the match was such a good match. But all Mika for sure, and this guy has another guy with a super bright future. I think this is his coming out party. We're gonna see him quite a bit probably on these Who's Number One cards, on these big cards that we have coming up, and who knows, this guy might be a superstar come this time this next year.
Something you gotta love about Mika is a submission hunter, right? Just like we saw at Nogi Pans, he's going out there, he's tapping really good guys and women. I mean, even in the closing minute of this match, he clearly had it in the bag. He had the decision locked down, no problem, and he's still going for that arm lock and stuff. He's like one of these DDS guys, it seems, where it's like he wants to go out there and win by sub, he just doesn't want to win by decision.
Exactly. You can't rest on your laurels, especially on such a big stage like Who's Number One. We got so many eyes watching, we got the biggest podcasters, we got the biggest names in the sport right there watching along. This is a huge, huge stage, and to just sit back and kind of rest on oh, I think I got this one on the bag, you know, that's not going to cut it on the Who's Number One stage. So guys like Andrew, guys like Mika, who are out there pushing the pace, trying to get that submission out there to the very, very last second, this is exactly what we want.
One thing to note, too, about Mika is he's still growing. Of course, he's still growing physically. He's only 17 years old. But he's also still growing his mental game and his technique. He was at the Gordon Ryan seminar the night before the event.
Crazy. Yeah, that's incredible.
And asking questions, you know, making sure that he picked up something, he came home with something. So. Mm-hmm.
And like Mike said, I think he was disappointed that he didn't get the submission. You know, he was happy to be on the stage. He was happy to get the win, but he was a little disappointed not to get that dominant finish, which is perfect.
Connor, I'm sure the boys in the chat got a lot to say about this one. I'm sure they're doing some matchmaking. I imagine I know who they're saying. What do they have to say about this match?
Everyone was super impressed with Mika. I think we're being echoed in the chat. Belts don't matter. And Mika, again, is just another example of that. You see him go through brown belt pans, and he can be going through black belt pans.
He'll kill a lot of black belts. There's no question. Yep. What are they saying there? Are they doing any matchmaking? Are they doing my job in there for me?
Not yet. They are trying to get a Who's Number One Legends card. So, like, maybe some of the old school guys. But that's for down the line, if that ever happens.
Sounds like a bunch of white belts in the chat.
Who's asking for the Legends card?
It actually wasn't GS. GS is here just to throw out for the roll call. I think it was a new guy. Yeah, it was a new guy. Give me one second. I'll find it.
All right. Well, moving on to the main card. Oliver Taza versus Jonathan Alves. Big win for Oliver Taza. He had a close call against Johnny Tama last time he was on the card. Man, the camera angles I saw of the second heel hook, I was cringing. I didn't want to watch it. I thought he was going to snap Jonathan's leg in half in that match.
Brutal. Yeah, I mean, this one probably had the most question marks kind of going into this match. I feel like a lot of people just didn't really know how this one was going to play out, including myself. We all knew that Jonathan has that positional dominance game. He's looked so good in the gi, brown belt world champion, blue belt world champion. And Taza, on the other hand, you know, no-gi specialist. How are these two worlds going to collide? And it was the no-gi specialist. It was the heel hooks that were the difference, of course, for Taza.
Yeah, and to be honest, I think we all speculated that the no-gi versus lack of no-gi experience could play a role here. But given what we've seen from Jonathan Alves in the past, I didn't expect that to play as much of a role as I think it ended up playing. Alves is typically such a good pressure passer. He did manage a pass against Taza, but he wasn't able to do much with it. But those leg locks, I don't know how Jonathan kept his face so, you know, so solid. I mean, I was ready to tap for him.
You got to admire his stoicism.
Yeah.
I think going into this one too, like, we had heard so much with Jessa and Cole in the past, like, oh, AOJ, they're IBJJF, you know, this is no-gi, these different rules or whatever, and they just showed up and just stunted on people anyway. So we sort of figured it'd be the same thing, but it's like Taza was clearly just on another level with the leg game knowledge, right?
Yeah, it didn't look like, you know, Jonathan was too well versed in the escapes or there. I'm sure they drilled that a lot kind of going into the match, but, you know, that type of stuff takes a long, long time. I think especially those kind of minute details, those minute grip switches that the DDS are so good at and things like that. So I think Jonathan's probably going to have to go back and study a little bit more of those leg entanglement games and the defense to really kind of shore up that part of his game, because Taza definitely exposed that hole in his game.
Yeah, and I think a big part of it too is that Jonathan, we know he's a great passer and he's a great top player. He let Taza come on top a little bit more than I expected him to. And most of Taza's leg lock setups that we've seen on both of his Who's Number One matches, and really a lot of his matches in general, most of his leg locks are set up from the top position. He really prefers a backstep style rather than like an underneath entry. So very surprised that Jonathan was willing to concede top position more than one occasion.
Interesting.
Big W for Taz. I think the DDS went 4-0 on this one, right? The DDS is doing very well under our rules. I mean, these rules really, I mean, if you go out there and you attack, you're going after submissions, you're constantly attacking, just like Mikey too is great under our rules. The Ruotolos, I mean, that the DDS type of guy is going to be great in it. So that big momentum for Taza going out of this. Excited to see who he's got next. What was the next match on the card? Who do we go to after that?
Patty versus Jessa.
Patty versus Jessa rematch. Patty had beat Jessa when Jessa was like 16 or 14 or something, when she was a blue belt. I mean, Jessa pretty basically did what we all thought she was going to do when we made our predictions. I mean, there's basically a big three in this division, in my opinion, right? It's Jessa, it's Grace, it's Maissa. That's the top three. And I mean, this is something we're going to talk about when we get to the September event. This women's 115-pound, eight-girl bracket is going to be crazy. So I'm really looking forward to that.
Jump in.
Yeah, I was really impressed by just Jessa's ability to jump through that pass, right? She passed directly into an armbar, and then that was the end of it. But exactly like you said, Mike, it's the top three. And then there's really kind of like everybody else is who knows where any of the rest of those maybe 8 to 10 girls land. Like, it's anybody's ballgame, I think, between Danielle Kelly, Jessie Crane, right? Patty Fontes. Like, there's a number of girls in the rest of the division that are all vying for that like 4 and 5 spot.
Man, every time you see Jessa Khan compete too, it's just nonstop submission attacks, right? Like, she's just going out there getting after it. This is what we need to grow jiu-jitsu, right? We need people that are going out there, getting after, putting on exciting matches. And, I mean, Jessa Khan's just the walking example of that. She's always attacking every time I see her compete.
Yeah, especially this one. I think, you know, talking to Jessa in the lead-up, you know, she was very motivated. Like you said, this was a match that she had lost when she was a little bit younger, a blue belt, 16 years old. She's a little bit older now, hadn't faced Patty in a minute. So she really, really wanted to get that one back and really wanted to make sure it was a dominant submission victory. And really from start to finish, this match kind of was all Jessa. And not too often we see an armbar like this on the Who's Number One stage quite like this, but that just goes to show how dominant Jessa is and how good she's becoming. That she, you know, a few years ago Patty kind of you know, took it to her, and now already she's just light years kind of ahead that previous generation, and is already looking towards girls like Grace and Maissa and everything. So
yeah, look great. I mean, submission finish on a black belt Nogi world champion. But this takes us to our fourth match of the night, right? Or our third match of the night. Gabriel Almeida versus Nikki Ryan. We had heard, like, I did an interview with Gordon the day before, and he was saying, like, oh, you know, we got to get Nikki to look as good as he is in the room. I know Nikki wasn't happy with the PJ Barch performance. I feel like they're getting closer to there. He looked really dominant here. Got some guard passes, got a couple back takes. I'm sure Nikki's not happy he didn't get the submission, but I mean, he bumped up in weight. He probably gave up a lot of size, and this was a dominant victory for him against a great opponent in Gabriel Almeida.
It was really cool to finally get to see this passing game we've heard so much about, right? The last couple of matches, we've seen Nikki pull the guard and try and wrestle up and not really get to the top position, but they keep everybody in the DDS squad keeps teasing Nikki's top game and how good of a passer he is. So it was really a pleasure to finally see it and to see his body lock passing style and the way that he used that to get to the back. Now, obviously, he didn't finish the back. That surprised me the most, I think, in this match, because if we remember Nikki's ADCC trials run in 2019, right, he finished like four or five of his opponents from the back. The only one he didn't finish from the back, he got a heel hook. Mm-hmm. So Gabriel Almeida's defense was, you know, very impressive, to say the least.
Yeah, it really was. You know, I think, you know, Mike and I have been to the training room there quite a bit, and they spend a lot of time drilling there on the back and submitting guys from the back and that situational sparring. So to see Gabriel escape not only once but twice definitely was impressive. I'm sure frustrating for Nikki, but I still don't think we've seen the best Nikki, you know, the best version of Nikki out there, which makes me excited still. You know, he's going out there against high-level black belt opponents, and he's beating them considerably, but, you know, I know, and I think a lot of those guys know, I think a lot of people know that the ceiling for Nikki is still far, far away from what we've seen. So it just goes to show that the development we're going to see over these next couple matches, wherever Nikki decides to compete or however many he does for the rest of the year, we've still got a long way, I think, to see the best version of Nikki Ryan. And that makes me super excited.
I mean, talk about a bright future for jiu-jitsu. Look at four of these winners that we talked about. Cole Abate, 16, Mika Galvao, 17, Jessica, 19, Nikki Ryan, 19. And there's others out there that weren't crazy on this card. Rotolo brothers, some other people. So, I mean, there's some crazy good young people. Just imagine 4 or 5 years what the jiu-jitsu scene is going to be like. It's going to be just absolutely nuts. I can't wait to see these guys develop over the years. All right, let's get to it. I mean, there's what's up, Connor?
The YouTube chat is finally – they're doing your job for you. I wanted to throw these out because you had asked earlier.
All right.
They want the Mikael versus Nikki Ryan match.
I've heard that a million times online for sure.
Absolutely. And – they want to see us run it back, or actually do it this time, the Grace Gundrum versus Jessica Khan match. Everyone wants to see that. Luis Quinones thinks it'll break the internet, so.
I mean, I'm sure that match is probably destined to happen in September. We'll get to the September event later on. But all right, let's do it. We got to talk about this match. I mean, there's not much we can say that hasn't been said online. The fans went crazy. I mean, I think first and foremost, I need to take responsibility as a matchmaker. I should have known going into it. With these two guys' styles, they might cancel each other out, and it might turn into a wrestling match. In my opinion, not to trash the ref, in our rules, I think there should have been some stalling calls. I think if you're on the feet at our event, you got to be working for a takedown, not like just circling and clubbing is stalling under our rules. I would like to see some stalling calls. I mean, a lot of people called for a double DQ. I said that the other day, but maybe even if there was just one stalling call, it would have got these guys to get going. But it's like this is what we're trying to avoid. I'm talking about Hinger versus Wagner.
Yeah.
I haven't said
yeah.
it. This is what we're trying to avoid on the event. Not trying to trash these guys. We just got to, with our rules and with our matchmaking going forward, do something to avoid this. But, yeah, I don't think anybody was happy with it.
Yeah, you have two high level. Listen, nobody, you know.
They're not happy with it either.
Yeah, no, of course. Yeah. Wagner and Josh, you know, their credentials speak for themselves. These guys are elite grapplers in jiu-jitsu. They've been around for a very long time. They have some, you know, credentials that are just impossible. You know, these guys are legends. They're on their way to being legends anyway. And, you know, but sometimes this happens. When you pit two guys close in the skill level, they have kind of similar styles. Of course, this type of thing might happen. But I think, like Mike said, we're learning, of course, as we go here. And, you know, it's our job as well, I think, to push the pace and to hit them with stall callings. It definitely deserved some stalling calls in there, you know, especially on a wrestling match. If that were a wrestling match, there would have been like 500 stalling calls.
Yeah, like in a wrestling match, your hand fighting has to be offensive. You have to be constantly working on the offense. You can't, yeah.
You haven't taken a shot in 15 seconds, you're stalling.
Yeah, that's the way I look at it with the wrestling on the feet in our matches too. You have to be constantly working towards a takedown. Otherwise, I want to see the ref start hitting people. I mean, yeah. It's just something we got to work on in the future.
Mm-hmm. And I really think, like, you know, we're sitting there. I'm sitting there, CP over my shoulder for Flow Wrestling. And as a wrestling expert, having him say, like, this is impossible to watch, that's an indicator that the wrestling that's happening isn't actually wrestling, right? It's the wrestling we've come to expect from, you know, some maybe jiu-jitsu events. But I think that, especially in our rule set, we have to find ways to do away with that. A lot of that is aggressive stalling calls, right? That's what the fans want, obviously. And that's what Who's Number One should be, is what the fans want.
The fans want exciting jiu-jitsu. And that's what Who's Number One is here to deliver, exciting jiu-jitsu at all costs, whether it means double DQ, whether it means hurting someone's feelings. That is the route we are on to make jiu-jitsu the most exciting sport that we all know it could possibly be. And unfortunately, you know, sometimes we have little hiccups, but just a little blip in the road. I think we all learned something about it, and we're moving forward. It wasn't the match that we had all hoped it would be, I would say.
Yeah, if this show was Saturday morning, I'd probably be a little bit more fired up. But I honestly feel a little bit bad for the guys at this point. I mean, they really got piled on online, and I don't. Let's just move on from that match. It's our fault. We got to make sure that doesn't happen again in the future. We're on to the co-main event. This is something I think people are going to be really excited about. Mikey Musumeci. What this was like his fourth match at Nogi since he got a black belt, went out there and showed a great leg lock game, tapped Lucas Pinedo, Nogi Pan champ, black belt in 2020, in under 2 minutes with a heel hook. Corey, first off, you know a lot of heel hook stuff. What do you think about Mikey's heel hook game?
So what Mikey did was really smart, because he – he stole kind of from the K-Guard game, the Matrix back take game that he uses, and just implemented that very Lachlan Giles-esque, right, with the shallow K-Guard into the 50-50 slash outside Sakaku. And you know, he tried the heel hook once there, he tried the same setup. But what I really like about the way Mikey's approaching this is he's taking the back take game that he already knows so well and just transitioning that into a leg attack game. So it's really it's seamless. And he said he was studying with Jason Rao. That's a guy you want to work with if you're trying to develop your leg locks quickly.
Yeah, I was surprised to hear that. I didn't know that he'd been working with Jason. I wonder if it was just kind of like all over over the internet and over Skype and stuff like that. But yeah, Jason, well known as one of the best leg lockers on the DDS team. Very, very well renowned in the leg lock game. But this is just insanely impressive. I think we have to put this a little bit into perspective. Like, Mikey hadn't trained heel hooks ever before.
This is his first ever hook. Yeah. He's never hit his leg.
He literally has never drilled heel hooks. This is a guy who drills 12 hours a day. This guy drills every single day, 10 hours a day, and he had never really jumped into the heel hook, to the leg lock world. Why would he? He's trying to become an IBJJF world champion where that stuff is illegal, so he never even wasted his time on it. Fast forward 1 month later, and the guy is an expert in these positions. It is absolutely mind-blowing that he can go out there and hit a technique that he'd never learned before, never drilled before, never hit in competition before, and then literally 4 weeks after he started drilling these things, he goes out there and hits it on the number one ranked person in his weight class. Absolutely mind-blowing. The things that Mikey Musumeci can do, the dude's a superhero.
I can't wait to see the future. I mean, Mikey's such a psychopath. He came off the mat, and the first thing he wanted to do was go drill. He's like, I screwed some stuff up. I want to go drill. If you guys haven't been following our interviews with him, he said he's training 12 hours a day, no gi. He's obsessed with heel hooks. We got a whole new Mikey in the game right now. We got no gi Mikey coming. And I mean, we're going to get to this in a minute when we go on to our next card, but this makes his match versus Juni super fun. But if you got anything to say about Mikey before we move on.
Yeah, I want to put this into perspective real quick because Lucas Pinheiro, Joao Miao tried that same setup maybe a dozen times in 10 minutes on Pinheiro. Didn't get it.
Whoa.
Junior Ocasio couldn't really get, I mean, he was looking for a lot of different leg entanglement setups, but he couldn't get very close to Lucas. Mikey, second try, hits it. First try, gets close.
Wow, I didn't realize that. That makes it even more impressive.
All right, on to the main event. These guys really picked up the slack after we had that 15-minute match that everybody was upset about, and then what? Our co-main and our main were like under 3 minutes combined. I think Craig might have been like 45 seconds or something. Craig went out there against Panza on like a week notice, gets the tap in under a minute. I mean, Panza hasn't competed too much. I don't think people are too surprised by this result. But, I mean, Craig is going to be hard to beat in our rules. I mean, this is a guy that's always attacking. You're not going to be able to run from him for 15 minutes. And Craig, something that I really admire about Craig's game is how efficient his leg attacks are. Like, you see a lot of guys get to the heel and then not finish it. It seems like, to me, it feels like 100% of the time that Craig gets there, he's going to break your leg or you're going to tap.
Chase, when Chase did a Fix My Game with Craig, he was remarking at how sticky Craig is. And it's apparent, right? When Craig gets hold of something, he hangs on to it. Like, and it doesn't matter that Luis Panza is 30 pounds heavier than him. It doesn't matter how scrambly you are. If you're Roberto or Ronaldo and you're fast and you're agile or you're heavy like Luis, if Craig gets a hold of you, you're stuck.
There's been a couple matches earlier, maybe like 2018, kind of 2017, where I feel like Craig got burned a couple times, you know, where he had those matches where guys just kept running away from him. Guys would, you know, he would get into some leg entanglement positions and they would high step and just kind of run out the gate or run out the off the mat, you know. So I think he got really frustrated with that and made sure that he could shore up that hole, that if he were to get a hold of somebody's leg, no matter what, he's going to finish them. And, you know, he's the proof is in the pudding. He goes out there. He did the same thing to Ronaldo pretty quickly. He did the same thing here to Panza pretty quickly. I'm curious to see if anybody can push this guy past the kind of 3-4 minute mark. You know, where obviously that in the very beginning, Craig is so dangerous. We haven't seen him in the later minutes on Who's Number One. So I'm curious to see what Craig will look like in the 13th minute, 14th minute, you know, in the future. But right now, man, just making it out of 60 seconds with Craig Jones is an accomplishment.
What's the longest he's gone? Was it? It has to be Ronaldo, right?
Ronaldo. How long was that? Shy of 5 minutes. I think it was 4:27.
So he hasn't even gone to, like, the first judge's favor yet.
Right. Wow.
Well, you know, one thing that strikes me about watching Craig perform, too, over and over again is I can't remember which Gordon Ryan match it was, but Gordon said, you know, a couple months ago, I can't even do my new stuff on these guys because I don't get past like my 2017 shit. Right. I feel like we're experiencing the same thing with Craig. We're like, we really don't see what does he do when leg lock fails? Cause nobody has made his leg lock attacks fail yet. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. He keeps on talking about his Dars game and we know he's got a great triangle. I would love to see some of that, but
I know he was talking about Darses. I was like, what? You can do those too? Yeah. I was like, dang.
We'll talk about that later when we get to him versus Ty. He said he's going to Dars Ty, but okay, let's move on. We got a lot to talk about. The big announcement last
great
week,
card,
right?
Though.
Crazy card. I think our best one yet. I mean, 5 out of 9 submissions, can't beat that. And three of the other matches were really fun to watch. Mm-hmm. The big announcement last week, September 25th, 26th, WNO Championships, 2-day tournament here in Austin, 5 different divisions, right? $250,000 going out, 5 belts. We're going to crown our first 5 champions. Don't worry, people complaining. Like, there's like, how come the women's cutoff is 115 heavy? The other divisions are going to get champs too. They're going to get their time soon. But you may ask yourself, why are we spending $250,000 on a jiu-jitsu tournament? I'll tell you why right now. Our CEO, Mark Floriani, doesn't give a fuck. He's just throwing money around. We're investing back into the community. And let me tell you something. This is a drop in the bucket compared to the other money we invest in the community. We're giving back. We're paying these athletes a whole bunch of money here. $30,000 for first place, $15,000 for second place, $7,500 for third place, 8-person brackets, 5 divisions. There's going to be double elimination, wrestle backs. If you grew up wrestling, you know the idea. So if you get a bad draw first round, you can still fight your way back to third. It's going to be a 2-day event, 4 sessions. I am super excited for this. This is going to take Who's Number One to the next level. What are you guys thinking about this thing?
I love it. Obviously, really, really looking forward to it. So many opportunities here. We've been building up Who's Number One. I have to imagine we're going to see a lot of these Who's Number One veterans out there in September as well. This is big. This is huge for what we're trying to do. And Who's Number One, I think crowning the champions is the next step.
Gotta put the strap on some of them.
Exactly. And have them defend it in 2022.
Get the belt.
This is going to be a huge deal for Who's Number One going forward. Really, really looking forward to it, man. And you know what I am super excited about, actually, is these wrestle backs. Is this double elimination? It means for more exciting matches. It means you can come back. If you lose, you can come back and still get that third place. You still get come away with some money. Try to get some submissions, bonuses, that type of thing.
First and foremost, with the invites, I got anxiety like never in my life on Saturday. It's no exaggeration. I was getting messages every 30 seconds. A lot of people just being like, oh, this is taking things to the next level. This and that. But a lot of athletes, I mean, people I never heard of trying to get in. This is going to be who we have to go with, right? We got to go with the people who helped us build this thing. The people who have been here doing these matches over the last year during COVID. And also people that are exciting. I mean, we always say, Who's Number One's about entertainment. We want to have an exciting tournament. We don't want to have somebody there that's going to stall their way through and win the tournament. We want this to go out there and be the most fun thing that people can watch. Just like when Danner was on Rogan, and they're like, you can watch this event, and you could have somebody who doesn't do jiu-jitsu watch it, and they'll enjoy it. We need people that are going to be like that going forward. And we got to stay loyal to the people who've been on these cards so far.
To wear the Who's Number One strap means you are the most exciting grappler in that division. You're the most exciting 205-pound grappler. You're the most exciting 185-pound grappler. That's what this Who's Number One strap means, that you stand atop everybody else when it comes to entertainment, excitement. That's what it means.
I mean, I wonder if we're going to have to get different size belts. Because can we put the same size belt on Maissa Bastos as that you would put on a Gordon Ryan?
I think it would be funny if you tried. I think we should definitely go that route for sure.
All right, well, first off, I'm going to kick it around. Everybody, what's your favorite division here? Women's 115, women's heavyweight. We've been building these divisions up a lot over the last year. Men's 155, lightweight. So obviously we'll have probably some lighter guys. We're not going to reveal anybody yet, but probably some lighter guys will bump up and do that. 185 is super exciting. Tons of names there. Heavyweight, without revealing anybody that's going to be in there, we haven't even finalized the divisions yet. Going into it, what do you think is going to be the most fun division to watch at this tournament?
Man, I love the women's strawweight division, the 115, but I think my favorite division, and my favorite potential division, given all the names we've looked at, all the people we've considered, is 155.
Really?
We're going to talk about some 155 guys later on, but there's a lot of like storylines in these divisions, right? I mean, when you talk about just some guys that have been on, like guys like Cade, guys like Kennedy. There are so many people in that division that have rivalries, that matches that have never happened, matches that have happened 100 times. I think we can talk about guys from lighter weight classes potentially stepping up. Like there's a lot of interesting matches, and we don't have answers to a lot of these matches.
Yeah, whatever weight class the Rotolo brothers go is is the most exciting one. No, but you know, obviously 155 is a big one. I mean, I thought Corey was going to talk about 115 here. I'll talk about that one just because I think, you know, they have been the 115 women's division has been a big part of the development here of Who's Number One. Pretty much every Who's Number One card we've had a 115 pound women's match on it, and every single time the matches have delivered. I think all these girls, we're going to have, you know, it's an eight person bracket, so I think you're going to have eight girls. All eight of them probably could win the tournament, you know. So I love that 115 pound division. It's surging right now with new talent, young girls in there. Who knows, we could see somebody, one of these young up and comers, upset a Maissa or a Grace. Who knows, that's how close I think all these girls really are. So
That bracket's gonna be so legit. Like, that's why we made the call to make the cutoff there, because like, we've had so many of these girls that are 115 where if it was a higher, they'd be sort of unfair to them, and they've been so excited. They've earned their own division.
They really have.
You saw these girls even at Nogi Pans in that division with Jessica Khan and Maissa and all of them, like, that division was crazy. It was probably the best division in Nogi Pans. Like, this is probably the most action-packed division in the sport right now. So we had to do women's 115 if we're doing two divisions here. And I mean, yeah, that one's just going to be, I think, nonstop. It might be a submission every single match. The wrestlebacks are going to be crazy. I'm really excited to put that one together.
And some of these girls have kind of been on the outside looking in for ADCC and right, things like that. You know, a lot of times they don't go so far down to that 115. So these girls deserve to be thrown a bone. Absolutely.
I can't wait to finalize these divisions. We're going to meet about this week and then start rolling them out over the summer. I think I'm looking forward to 185 just because we don't know who we're going to put in there, but there's so many potential up-and-comers that could be included. You got guys like Roberto, Wiltsy, Mika Galvao, Tyro Atola, William Tag. There's so many exciting up-and-comers that could be included in this bracket going forward for the future. I mean, this could be a division that basically is all of the people who are going to be the future of jiu-jitsu for the next 10 years, in my opinion.
We might have to cap the age at like 20. Just like all younger guys.
Connor, what are they saying in the chat? They got any opinions on this event? What are they thinking? What's their reaction?
Absolutely. They're really excited for, again, 115 women's and 155-pound men's, but I think we're kind of sleeping on the women's heavyweight because we're going to have potentially, ideally, in a perfect world, Rafael Iguedes, Elizabeth Clay, Gabby Garcia, Nachiele De Jesus. Like, come on. Those are the ones that I want to see, just as far as a spectacle. Who can take out Gabby? Who can earn that number one spot, like, officially? Super exciting.
Women's heavy, of course, going to be fun. If you watch Nogi Pans, Elizabeth Clay went out there and, what, tapped like 5, 6, 7 people. She tapped everybody she went against.
She's so good.
Rafaela just been killing everybody. Men's heavyweight's interesting, too. I mean, I'm still holding out hope that Gordon Ryan gets his stomach fixed in time for this thing. It'd be nice to have Gordon back for this thing, but I mean, we got a plan on going forward without him, unfortunately, right now. So it's gonna the story about this division would be who steps in and takes over that heavyweight division with Gordon out, right? Like, I mean,
true. I have a feeling that a lot of these guys are gonna be jumping at that opportunity, especially with Gordon out. You know, of course, the heavy hitters of the sport, guys like Cyborg and guys like Victor Hugo and you know, who knows, maybe even like a Luis Ponza and stuff like that. You know, these are the biggest dudes, the most exciting guys. Look great getting off the bus. Who's gonna step up and fill Gordon Ryan's shoes? We need somebody. You know, Gordon leaving his big shoes to fill. We need somebody from this heavyweight division to kind of step in there and push this sport forward like Gordon was doing.
Sure, that division is absolutely in flux right now because for the last 3 years, right, maybe longer, we've known exactly who the number one guy in that division is. Now it's anybody's game, so it's going to be really interesting to see who steps up and then takes control, or how much of a kind of power struggle there is for the number one spot in that division for a little while, and it could probably will transcend well past September.
Yeah, so this is really exciting news to drop. We've been working on this for a while, but it was exciting to get it out there. Five divisions, going to crown five champions. If you're in another weight class, don't worry. We're going to get to those ones later. But this particular tournament, over $50,000 going to first, second, and third. It's going to be four sessions over 2 days, I believe. Saturday morning will be the first round. Saturday night will be the semifinals. Sunday morning will be the consolations and the third place matches. And then Sunday night will be the main event, you know, all the finals going through. So, I mean, this is going to be four sessions, a lot of great jiu-jitsu. I really can't wait to look. I'm really looking forward to this thing. But we got even more stuff to drop, even more stuff to talk about. We're a little bit over 2 weeks from the next event, from Who's Number One, Craig Jones versus Tyro Toa. Obviously, running back the match that we had to cancel a little while back between Craig, which we'll get to that in a minute. Super excited about that match. But we're going to do an announcement today, right, Connor? Which announcement are we doing right now?
We're doing one for the next June 18th Who's Number One card. It's a super exciting match. I can drop it if you want.
Drop it. Go for it.
All right.
Drum roll.
Hell yeah. We are doing Cade Ruotolo versus Cole Franson, June 18th. It will be on the main card, but this is a super exciting one, especially seeing how Cade just showed out against Ethan Krellenstein. Man, I'm hyped.
All right, some of you guys may be thinking this is sort of like a random matchup. Franson hasn't been too active lately. You're right, but we ran out of options. Cade Ruotolo is one of those guys. The Ruotolo brothers are getting into this situation where not a lot of people want to run it with them. People know that these guys, their cardio is crazy. They're always attacking, going for submissions. And there was some big names that didn't want this match. I mean, we wanted to do Kennedy. Kennedy had a little injury thing going on. That one will happen eventually. I imagine they'll both be in the September bracket. It would only make sense. But Cade Ruotolo, I mean, the Ruotolo brothers in general, I think most people are scared of them, especially under these rules where you're going to have to deal with those attacks for 15 minutes.
I'm definitely afraid of them. I wouldn't want to fight them, so I get it. But, these guys, Ruotolo brothers right now, some of the best in the world. So if you're trying to be the best in the world, you got to test yourself against these guys. Love that Cole is stepping up. I've been high on Cole for a while here. I was always watching Cole as a purple belt, as a brown belt. I remember as a brown belt, he was smoking dudes on the IBJJF circuit. He had a really great showing at the ADCC East Coast Trials a few years ago as well. I believe he even made it further into the competition than the Ruotolo did that time around, but Cole's been out there, man. He's a West Coast guy. He's from California, I believe, the kind of like Fresno-ish area. Trains up there for a lot of good talent coming out of that area. So
let me see. He just told me his training location. So let me try and find this thing.
Yeah, I think he's somewhere around there if I remember correctly. But
Tinguinha is the team. Let me find the.
Exactly where that is.
Here's a reminder about Cole Franson too. He's the number five, I think, ranked lightweight, so 155.
I think he's gonna slide a little bit when I update the rankings tonight, just because he wasn't in Nogi
still,
bands.
I mean, he's in the top 10.
Yeah, he's gonna be in the top 10. Fairfax, California. Not quite sure where that is, but I mean, he has a Nogi win over Kennedy, I believe, from a tournament like a year and a half ago. So this is a legit matchup. These guys are meeting at a catch weight. Normally Cole would be another 155er, but I mean, we sort of came out of nowhere to him with it. He's like, hey, I can't get down to 55 right now. Going to meet at 165. Going forward, we're not going to, after this match, after this event, Craig and this match have catch weights. After this, no more catch weights. You got to do a division. There's no more 172 point whatever, 188 like we did last time. Everybody's going to have to pick a division. If you can't make 170, you're going 185. But this one's a catch weight, 165. Everybody's got to be excited just to see Cade Ruotolo go out there. His last match against Ethan was one of the most exciting things I've ever seen in my life, right?
Hands down. Best who's number one match I've ever seen. Both those guys put on a hell of a show, but Cade came out on top. Electric performance.
Yeah, in case you're forgetting that match, I just like that for me was not only the submission of the year front runner for sure, also the match of the year front runner for sure. The match was back and forth, but Cade had that nasty armbar in the beginning, and then that Darce is like nothing I've ever seen. I've never seen Matt side a submission that made my stomach churn so much, just seeing how deep it was and knowing that Ethan had nowhere to go.
Yeah, these guys are made for the Who's Number One stage, Ty and Cade Ruotolo. You know, it's been a lot about Ty recently. He had a great performance at ADCC and everything like that, so really excited to see Cade, you know, who's just as good, you know, getting that shine as well, because, man, both these guys are just going to be superstars in this sport for many years to come.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just excited to watch Cade go against anybody. I'd watch him go against Corey.
Exactly.
This is only 1 out of 10 matches on the card. We've only announced like half of them, maybe a little bit over half of them. Let's start at the main event and work our way down. Craig Jones versus Ty Ruotolo. This is one that I think benefited from getting canceled, because we were going to do it a couple months ago or whatever, a couple cards ago. When we announced, a lot of people didn't realize how big Ty is now. He weighed at 183.5. He went out and he beat William Tackett pretty dominantly. Didn't get the submission, but it was pretty decisive. Then Craig goes out and gets a 45-second submission. I mean, these guys are coming in with some momentum. So far, in their performances on Who's Number One, I think Craig's 3-0, Ty's 3-0 or 4-0. These guys have looked unbeatable under this rule set. These are two guys who don't stop attacking. This is guaranteed to be an exciting match. I think this match is way more legit after Ty's win over Tackett as well.
Yeah, but both guys are more impressive now to me than they were just a month ago when we expected the match to happen. And specifically, I think the William Tackett versus Ty Ruotolo match was what sealed the deal for me, that this was a legitimate match and not a match that might be too early or too late, right? If we had had it a month ago, I think the sentiment of everybody coming in was that Ty is great. Ty has a lot of potential, but he's not ready for Craig Jones. Now I think this is a legitimate matchup in everybody's eyes. Specifically watching the way that Ty handled a very talented, very tough William Tackett.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we all know how game William is. You know, of course, it was on a week's notice, but, you know, William, one of the best out there, and, you know, he's had some dominant wins on the Who's Number One stage as well. So to see Ty go out there and kind of do what he did to him, it just puts Ty kind of in a league of his own. You know, we've been talking a lot about superstars on the show, and man, what a star Craig Jones is becoming right in front of our eyes. You know, this guy's on the Ultimate Fighter now, and you know, he's on the Joe Rogan podcast. And he's doing all these other podcasts and things like that. So a lot of pressure, I think, is going to be on the shoulders here of Craig Jones to repeat the success that he's had on Who's Number One. 45-second submission, four-minute submission. He's looked so yeah. dominant out there. And so now he's going to have to go out there, repeat this success against the toughest opponent he's had this year.
Let's not forget that Ty is the one who requested this match. He really thinks he can win this match. Like he told you in your interview from the last time they're supposed to fight, he wants to bring him into deep waters. He thinks he has better cardio than Craig. But surviving a long time with Craig's another story. Before we get along, we haven't checked in with them in a little bit. Connor, what's going on in the chat? First off, are they behaving themselves?
The chat is trying to behave themselves.
I know Steve isn't there as a assistant moderator. Are you all right? You need any backup over there?
No, he keeps coming in every once in a while just to let people know, for example, that we don't talk about belts. He's reminded people. He's given us good stuff. But the chat is...
Unless they're gold belts.
Unless they're gold belts.
Yeah. Man,
that's all we do. But
championship belts. That's all we care about here at the Who's Number One podcast. All right, what's going on in there, Connor?
They are... Actually, I don't think they're super convinced that Ty has that much more of a leg up. But the ones that are convinced, I believe, are because how he beat William Tackett is more important than beating William Tackett. The complete domination and the answer that he had towards the leg lock game, jumping to the back, I think we've at least convinced a few people that not only is this a legit match, but this is a legit chance for Ty Ruotolo to step out and stand out as a superstar.
I don't care who you think is going to win. There's one thing you can't argue with. This has potential to be one of the best matches of all time. I mean, these are two guys that just do not stop attacking. This is going to be crazy. I cannot wait. If you complain about Wagner Hanger, tune in for this one, because this one's going to be wild. Who knows what the hell is going to happen.
Like you said, this one really could be like one of the greatest matches on Who's Number One.
Craig said in his post-match interview he's going to Darce Ty. Let's see if that happened. He wasn't going to commit to a Gordon style and say that's the only submission he's going to do, but he's going to try and Darce Ty.
I don't think he's going to go out there and heel hook Ty in 45 seconds. I think that's for sure. I think he's going to push him past that. You know, we've seen how the Ruotolos react to heel hooks these days. You know, they've made that a part of their game, part of their A game. You know, we even saw Cade attacking heel hooks on Ethan way before Ethan even tried to attack heel hooks. So these guys are offensive in the heel hook positions. They know the defense. I don't think Craig's going to go out there and be able to just tap Ty real quick like that. And so it's going to force Craig to look for the triangles, for the darces, for the other chokes and things like that when that kind of first stage of offense doesn't work.
I know we're still a couple weeks away from talking about the betting lines here. I'm really interested to see what the over-under for 10 minutes is going to be in this match, because Craig hasn't made it out of a five-minute match, right? Yeah. He's gone 30 seconds, 2.5 minutes, 4.5 minutes, and Ty wants to drag this into deep water. So yeah. Really curious to see what that looks like on the betting
lines. How far is Ty gone? I mean, he won a decision on the first one, which was Guy Abbey, JJ Ferrose. I'm not even sure if we should count that in the Who's Number One.
But it was a decision with Nicky.
Yeah, so that and then a decision with Nicky. That was 15 minutes, right?
He went
15 minutes with Tackett, although he was dominant in both those decisions. But then he tapped Cody. So he's basically gone the distance in three out of four.
And he tapped Cody in the last 10 seconds of the match.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, really? So he's gone really far. It's right. Basically the opposite of Craig. So, yeah.
Yeah, Michael Sears.
Good luck to Ace Rosti making that line. What's going on?
They're doing your job for you. They want to see the winner of Heisem and Keenan face off with the winner of Ty versus Craig.
We'll get to Heisem Keenan in a second, because the co-main event of this event, might be a match I'm more excited for, arguably, than the main event. After we've seen Nogi Mikey, Leglock Mikey come out, he's going against Junior Ocasio, a leg lock guy, an Ogi specialist. People are super excited about this one. I'm excited to see how it goes, because, Mikey, there's a lot of ways things can go with this. Is he going to enter a little leg lock duel with Junior, knowing that Junior's so versed in that game? Is he going to try and, you know, Ruotolo brother Bolo out of a leg lock entry? I mean, this one, I don't know what the hell to expect.
Yeah, very interesting. Of course, you know, the leg lock against Lucas Pinheiro was, you know, textbook, looks so sick. But of course, Lucas not known as a leg lock guy, not known to be well-versed in those positions. I'm sure he is. But Juni is known as a leg locker. He's a guy who's taken a bunch of legs home this year. So it'd be interesting to see, is Mikey going to go and exchange in that shootout? There's a lot more, you know, if he were to mess up or anything like that, Juni's going to be able to capitalize on those mistakes. So very interesting to see how Mikey's going to approach this one this time around.
Connor, before we get to Corey's opinion on it, ask them in the chat what they think about this one, because this is a really intriguing match. I want to know how they think this match is going to go. Corey, what are you thinking about this match?
No idea what to do with this match, right? I mean, the stats, the numbers say that Mikey is borderline unbeatable. The two times he's lost in a guy against a guy in his weight class since 2016, he lost by like referee decision in IBJJF. Mm. So he never loses except for when it's so close, it's too close to call. That being said, the leg locks do offer a really new challenge to this. And despite the fact that Mikey's shown that he's competent in leg locks, Juni's been doing this for years, right? So really intriguing matchup. Don't know what to think of it, really. I'm going to have to just sit back and watch.
Just me seeing things behind the scenes. One of the funniest things I've ever seen in jiu-jitsu is no-gi Mikey. Went from literally his first step in who's number one, he was drilling in the gi in the warm-up room like before the match. Just gi, all in the gi. Didn't train no-gi for the match. Hated no-gi. Now he just trains no-gi 12 hours a day, doesn't train in the gi. It's pretty hilarious. I'm excited to see where this goes. Anything with Mikey's always hilarious. Very enthusiastic guy. So, Connor, what's the feedback in there in the chat? How do they think this thing's going to go down?
Everyone is afraid of no-gi Mikey, and everyone in the chat knows how dangerous he is. It's interesting. Like, what, a month ago, 2 months ago, we were having a conversation of how does Mikey avoid the leg lock game to remain safe in no-gi, and now we're asking, how do you avoid leg locks with Mikey to remain safe? I think the chat's just excited to keep seeing him grow.
I mean, Mikey's one of these guys. He's like a Craig Jones, like one of the Ruotolo brothers, where it's like, in our rules, where you have to be attacking the whole time, that's the only way you're going to win, really. I mean, that's a tough match for anybody. You got to withstand Mikey's attacks. He's pretty efficient. He's like Craig. Craig's super efficient with his attacks. You got to withstand that for 15 minutes. That's a tough task.
Yeah, and he's got so many other weapons, you know, that we haven't even seen in the no-gi world. So, I don't know. This is a very interesting matchup. I have to think that Juni has the leg lock edge, just because, like Corey said, he's been the one, you know, kind of pioneering this style a little bit here in 2021. And, you know, so I have to think he's going to be more well-versed in the intricacies of the leg locks. But we haven't seen the rest of no-gi Mikey. You know, I'm sure no-gi Mikey has a sick barambolo and has a sick ankle lock and has a sick back take. You
might
know,
have some wrestling.
Yeah.
Coming from the chat, they did want to know, if you had to pair Mikey up against someone from DDS, what would be your first match make?
Well, I mean, the closest in size to him. Well, I guess there's guys, junior members that are closer in size. Some of like the, what they call like the senior members, right? The closest in size to him is Ethan. So, I mean, that would be the match make. Although Mikey would be giving up like 20 pounds still. But, yeah, him versus the DDS would be a tough match.
But Mikey versus Gordon would be sick, too.
That's the move. Absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Yeah, who knows? Third match of the card. This is a really exciting one. Connor, can you look something up for me real quick? When was the last time Keenan competed? I'm pretty sure it was on Fight to Win almost a year ago, like last summer. But Keenan Cornelius making his return, coming back to no-gi, coming to the Who's Number One stage. And this is sort of an interesting storyline because he's coming here to avenge his student almost in a way. Haizam Rita defeated Sloan Clymer on the prelims last month. In the post fight interview, asked for a match with Keenan. They were on the same size. Keenan's like, yeah, whatever, let's run it. So we got Keenan coming back, hasn't competed in a long time. I'm really interested to see how this one goes down.
Yeah, you know, when Haizam asked for that match, I was kind of thinking, watching the interview, like, all right, good luck with that. I haven't seen Keenan compete in over a year.
When was it, Connor? Do you got the answer yet?
Yeah, that was against Mateus Luna on Fight Twin, right? 148 back in 2020.
Well, yeah, we know 2020, but what month was it?
I don't have that. Give me one second. Okay. I got you.
All right, I think that was August. But his last no-gi match was No-gi Pans 2019.
Yeah, right before ADCC.
Before ADCC. But when Haizam asked for the match, I thought, like, long shot. You know, I don't think we'll probably see Keenan no-gi again for a very long time. And Keenan stepped up, and I think we all got exactly what we wanted, because a jiu-jitsu world without Keenan Cornelius is a sad jiu-jitsu world.
Yeah, a lot of fans.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, go ahead, Connor.
It was July, just heads up, July of 2020.
About that, what, 10 months ago?
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean, last match that Heisem had, you know, Heisem's a specimen, man. The dude's huge. He's jacked. He looks like he's gonna go out there and murder fools. So to see him go out there and put on a good performance against Sloan, and then he went up and shook Keenan's hand after, you know, as they do, because Keenan was in Sloan's corner. It was like, oh man, Heisem looks huge all the time. But then him standing next to Keenan, it was like, oh, those guys are kind of like the same size. That'd be an interesting matchup. So crazy that it happened so quick. Came to fruition like it did. Shout out to the matchmaker Hollywood Mike for putting that one together so quick. Crazy match. Heisem, you know, big dude. He's young. He's cutting his teeth on the Who's Number One stage out there. So this would be a huge win to take out a legend, a fan favorite like Keenan. Could really set Heisem up, you know, for a bright future.
People always sleep on Keenan's no-gi because of the whole worm guard thing and the lapel stuff that's made him famous. I mean, he's a no-gi world champion black belt. He's like, I think, a 4-time medalist at ADCC. I think he got 3 in the weight and 1 in the...
Absolute.
In the absolute, right. If I'm right. Like, mm-hmm. Keenan is super accomplished. Like he said before on interviews, he's more accomplished no-gi than he is in the gi. So having Keenan come back for a no-gi match is super, super interesting. Always an exciting guy. Another guy always going for the submission. Connor, what are they saying about Keenan coming back? What are people thinking about this?
The chat is split. I think people are leaning on Heisem's recent IBJJF, like, no-gi pans, I believe.
What do you mean they're split? Like, half the people think that Heisem's going to win it?
So far.
That's really surprising to me. I would have thought Keenan would be a heavy favorite here.
Yeah, I think they were talking about Rita's size and how just dangerous someone that big and that technical can be. But I'll let you guys know whenever the chat keeps tuning in.
You know, one thing I really like the idea of in this match is we've seen how good Heisem Rita's no-gi judo is, right? I mean, he throws people all over the place, and it's, I mean, he's 6'4", right? The velocity is insane. Keenan has been playing a lot with his judo. He doesn't typically prefer wrestling. I don't know if he may pull guard right off the bat, but if not, we'd love to see just some old school judo.
You're scaring me right now. We don't need another Wagner versus Hanger, and especially after Heisem's last match wasn't really a barn burner versus Sloan. Let's hope this thing gets to the ground ASAP. Or at least if they're gonna do some of your no-gi judo or wrestling, somebody hit something quick, yeah. Because we can't have another 15 minutes. But with Keenan, I don't think that'll happen. I think even if Keenan wrestles with him or whatever, he'll end up sitting in a minute. But yeah, I'm really excited this one. Reed, how do you think this thing goes down?
Man, crazy to think about it. We haven't seen Keenan out there in a while, but like you said, man, this guy, Keenan has a big submission wins over a lot of guys. I mean, he submitted Kynan at ADCC, I remember off the top of my head. I'm pretty sure he submitted Craig, I think. So definitely, I think Keenan has to be the favorite here. But like we were saying, Heisem's young, Heisem's hungry. You know, he's in the U.S. now. He's putting things together, I think. So I think Heisem was going to come out and come hot at Keenan. I think that's what he's got to do. He's got to overwhelm Keenan kind of right in the beginning. You know, nobody is scarier than Nicholas Maragalli. I don't think Keenan is going to get scared by competing against it. If he didn't get scared against Nicholas Maragalli or anything like that, or scared's a dumb word, but you know what I mean. Nicholas Maragalli is one of the most frightening guys to compete against. I don't think Keenan's going to have any problem with this height or the size of Heisem.
I think we'll see a different Heisem this time around. I don't think he'll be as conservative. We see a lot every now and then with these guys on the prelims. You know, they've never been under these type of lights before.
Yeah,
like we hear it from them. Really, they're like, man, my Instagram has never been going so crazy. Like the media, they've never like felt anything like this before. And I think knowing that there's this many viewers on them gets to these up and comers sometimes, and they sort of go out there and they're a little bit more conservative than we would like. But I think Heisem's going to come out here. He's going to want to put on a show this time against Keenan. And I think with Keenan, it's sort of impossible to not put on a show because Keenan's going to come after you.
And I think, Ben, Keenan, it's been a while since we've seen Keenan out there on the stage. We don't know how you know, he's of course working at Legion and he's building his team. We don't know exactly how much he's been dedicating to training and things like that. So I think Heisem's got to come out and he's got to put the pressure. He's got to put the pace on Keenan right off the gate here to kind of really test how serious is this, is he taking it these days?
They have, the chat has spoken. The wisdom of the chat says Keenan by heel hook. That's the call.
Wouldn't be surprised.
That's a good prediction.
Keenan hit some heel hooks before.
Yep.
All right, going forward on the card, I think next in the lineup would be probably Rafaela versus Aaron Harp out of the matches that we've announced. I mean, Rafaela Geddes looked super dominant in her Who's Number One performance. She went out there, submitted Maggie Grandotti, and just a great match, super exciting. And Aaron Harp, as the only time I've seen her was versus Maggie on Fight to Win, right? That was Fight to Win. I don't know if she tapped her, but she was very dominant in that one. Was it against Maggie?
It was against Maggie. It was a decision, but it was very convincing.
Yeah, so
and
I mean,
she did subversive, I believe, one tournament, and looked really dominant in that one as well.
Rafaela is a girl who's just racking everybody around her size these days, so it's hard to find somebody that's going to push her. So having some new blood here in Aaron, I think Aaron fights MMA and stuff. I think this is going to be an interesting match. I'm excited to see how this one goes, if Aaron can challenge Rafaela. Rafaela, I mean, just like we keep on hammering it home, we're going to say it every single time. This is why Rafaela's on this thing, because she's always trying to submit people. She puts on a good show. We want a match that's going to be exciting, that's going to grow the sport, that we can throw on YouTube, and that people are going to watch it and be like, damn, this jiu-jitsu shit's cool.
Yeah, and you know what? Aaron is equally gritty. The one thing that we always say about Rafaela is she is just kind of hard-nosed. She's willing to work for 15 minutes and really put the pace on somebody. But from what we've seen from Aaron, she has a very similar style, so it's going to be combative. And I think, you know, if we talk about some takedown battles that are not exactly exciting to watch, this is not going to be one of them. Even if they spend some time standing, they're going to both try and take it to the mat, and they're both going to work hard on the feet, on the ground, trying to finish each other. So it's the kind of tenacity that we like to see from both competitors.
Yeah, more new generation girls. These are girls who are, you know, kind of on the come up, cutting their teeth, and these girls, both, you know, whoever wins here are going to be a big star.
Yeah, Rafaela been a black belt less than a year, so let's keep moving along. We've been going for a while already. We still got some more matches to talk about. What's another one that we've? Don't let me forget any of these that are on the list. Wiltsy versus Gabriel Almeida. We announced, right? Andrew Wiltsy. I mean, a few people messaged me and said, "Hey, why he just lost to Nicky Ryan? Why is he going against Andrew Wiltsy?" This one was booked before the Nicky match. It was Nicky needed an opponent on short notice. We know Gabriel is easy to work with, so we gave him back-to-back months. Andrew Wiltsy is 2-0 now on Who's Number One. He won a decision against PJ Barch, and then he went out and submitted David Garmo. He's going up against Gabriel Almeida, who's going to be, you know, coming off a loss. He's going to be very hungry. He's going to go out there and get that W. I mean, Andrew Wiltsy, you guys know about him, Daisy Fresh series. He eats crystals. He's a wizard, all that stuff, orange chicken. Everybody's excited. I mean, anytime Andrew's on the card, it's exciting.
Yeah, and speaking of Andrew's submission over David Garmo, Gabriel Almeida had one of the coolest submissions I saw last year. I think in Nogi American Nationals against Garmo in the final. It was like this weird choke omoplata. Like it was almost like a reverse omoplata into a choke. Really nasty. So that they have a couple of similar opponents. I'm sure that Garmo's not the only one. But I think it'll be an interesting match, kind of a clash of styles. I don't think that we will see the same Gabriel Almeida we saw against Nicky Ryan.
Yeah, this is a great match for Andrew here. You know, it is definitely a step up in competition, I think, from Garmo. You know, Gabriel Almeida is a guy who's an ADCC trials winner, ADCC veteran. These are things that Andrew was trying to accomplish. Gabriel's kind of already been there. So this is, I think, the exact perfect matchup for a guy like Andrew Wiltsy to see exactly where he is at. Gabriel's proven that he can hang with anybody pretty much in the black belt ranks. You know, so this is a great matchup, I think, for both these guys. Both these guys, you know, whoever wins here could really break out.
I'll tell you what I want to see out of Andrew here. It's no secret he's an old friend of mine. We compete against each other at white belt, trained together a whole bunch of times. I mean, I produced the Daisy Fresh thing. I want to see – when I was saying I'm scared of wrestling with the other matches, I want to see Andrew come out and wrestle here because as a friend of his and as somebody who wants to see him progress, he's gotten too comfortable in these, like, IBJJF tournaments at Nogi Pans, just pulling guard and letting guys, you know, dance around, step in, step out, circling his feet. We got to see Andrew wrestle. He's a great wrestler. We got to see him wrestling, get on top, see some buzzsaw passing at him. We got to see some excitement out of him in this one. I don't want to see him – playing too much guard off his back. I want to see Andrew go out there, wrestle somebody, or let them pull because he's got great passing. That buzzsaw passing is relentless.
He's so aggressive on his feet. He really is. Takedowns or passing, you're totally right. So I definitely want to see some of that aggression.
Connor, what are they saying about our resident wizard, Andrew Wiltsy, in there?
They're actually super excited to see it, and I think because everyone's gunning for the Andrew Wiltsy versus Nicky Ryan match. They're in the chat asking for it, and I think this is the path towards that. If he can get past Gabriel Almeida, we can actually see how they stack up against each other, especially like Nicky Ryan's passing versus Andrew Wiltsy's passing.
There's so many goddamn exciting matchups around 185. It's just crazy. That's why I can't wait for this 185 division in September. We got a meeting this week. We're going to finalize those divisions and start to roll. I can't wait. What else have we announced on this thing?
Danielle Kelly and
a prelim.
Jesse Crane.
So out of what we've announced so far, are any of them prelims?
Jessa and
I think we're announcing one more prelim tonight and one more prelim tomorrow, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so this is the only prelim that's been announced, free on Facebook and YouTube. This is going to probably have major seeding implications mm-hmm. in the women's 115 division in September. Danielle Kelly and Jessica Crane. Jessica Crane is, I think, 1-0 on who's number one. She beat Lauren Sears. Okay. Danielle Kelly's 0-1, lost to Jessica Kahn. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you know, there's the big three going on in that division. There's some, you know, credentialed girls, some veterans. These girls are probably going to have a tough draw anyway. It goes first round, but this will have some seeding implications for sure.
Really should have some rankings implications too. Jessie Crane is currently 7. She just beat number 6, Lauren Sears, and Danielle Kelly is number 5 right now. So I don't know if that's changing.
I'm just being lazy. I've got it in my sheet. I'll update it tonight. Those will move up. But I mean, I think they're like right next to each other.
Yeah.
But,
nonetheless, this match is going to have some rankings on the line either way.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, we were talking about this weight class being stacked with talent, being one of the most exciting divisions in jiu-jitsu at the moment, and 100%, both these girls represent that 115-pound weight class super, super well. Danielle didn't have a great performance. I think even she was disappointed in her performance last time versus Jessa, so I think this time around she's going to be hungry to come out, correct the wrong that she had last time, and put together a great performance. Jessie looked phenomenal, though, against her... against Lauren Sears, the last one, so perfect matchup. But for these both these girls,
Jessica Crane is one of these. She's sort of in the situation like we were talking about with Cole Abate, where she's people be like, I don't want to super fight with her. She's just a brown belt or whatever. But it's like she's on that level. I think she could be top 5 in the world right now in no-gi at that division. And she's just got to prove herself. You know, go out there in September and maybe knock somebody off. But I think she'll be top 5, top 4, maybe contending with those girls with that big three in this division in not long.
Yeah, I think she's – sorry, Corey, go ahead.
Look at her performance at No-Gi Pans, right? Her first match she came out, she won, I think, like 23-0.
Wow.
Right? And
I think it was like 32 or something more ridiculous.
It was a high score. And then in her second match, she actually ended up in a little bit of armbar trouble. Hung out there, got out of the armbar, and ended up racking up like 14 points. It didn't get scored on despite the fact that she was trapped in an armbar and then racked up 14-0.
I mean, Danielle Kelly wasn't satisfied with her performance last time. I think she said she was injured or something. She didn't like say that publicly, but she wasn't satisfied with her training camp. Did she come in on late notice? I can't remember. I think she might have come in on late notice even. Did she come in for Grace?
No, the Grace.
Oh, no, Jessa pulled out versus Grace. No, I think we just made that one. But, she wasn't satisfied with her performance last time. She's going to be wanting to put on a show this time. I mean, just like we said, a lot of time these up-and-comers, their second time on the show, they look a little bit better. So this one is one I really don't know what the hell to expect. Mm-hmm. It's going to be the first match of the night. It's going to be a fun way to kick things off. We got another prelim coming tonight, another prelim coming tomorrow, and then a really out of left field crazy announcement coming tomorrow that you guys are going to be like, what the hell are you guys even doing? So I'm looking forward to this. Connor, before we get out of here, what's going on in the YouTube chat?
We got a 50-50 split on that last one, Crane versus Kelly. No one can really tell what's happening. But the YouTube chat should stay tuned. We're dropping another prelim match later today, one tomorrow later in the afternoon, and a really surprising one that you cannot guess tomorrow morning, 10 a.m.
All kinds of crazy shit going on. We're going to be throwing money around, putting belts on people. It's going to be a fun rest of the year.
Who's number one's taking over the world, baby? World domination.
World domination. It's the name of the game. I mean, it's going to be a fun rest of the year, and 2022 is going to be even crazier. Looking